Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, how's it going? Welcome to episode number 26, Darchu, of Someone Who Isn't Me. My guest on Swim is Randy Bly. Most of you are going to know him as the frontman and singer of Lamb of God, but he's also, among other things, a New York Times best-selling author for his book Dark Days. He's a radio presenter, an excellent and accomplished photographer, and an all-round good man. So we met up when the band was over here and they were about to play Wembley Arena because they were direct support to Slayer on their last ever London headline show. We hung out for a little bit and over the course of the chat we discussed some pretty heavy stuff to do with, you know, the nature of being in the public eye and the current state of things in the world, his love of photography and how he ended up singing for Bad Brains at a couple of shows as well. He's super smart, he's a really funny guy, and one that's definitely navigating life on several planes at once, if you know what I mean. As is often the case with any artist, to be fair, but he's faced a bunch of really crushing adversity, and he's not only dealt with it honestly, but he's come out the other side of each event with a lot of dignity, and I think a newfound perspective on things. And that's kind of coloured like a spiritual component to his life, I think, which often gets overlooked. And he's a hippie punk, surf rap, essentially, all-round good dude. The way that this conversation started, it made me laugh at the time, and I'm into it, it's wicked. But as I was going back through listening to it and checking the audio levels whilst I was making the painting, which is the portrait of Randy that I've painted for the cover of this episode, and I listened back to it whilst I was doing that, the talk took on a much greater poignancy because 12 days after we recorded this episode, my mum passed away from cancer. Now, I think it's fairly clear if you're a regular listener to Swim, you probably have a decent idea on what my views are on things of a spiritual and mystical nature, I guess. Yeah, they're there for everyone to hear. So the actual event of my mum passing for me has been... It was more about the acceptance of a transition, I guess. And I was prepared for it. It wasn't a surprise. I knew, my whole family knew that she was sick. She'd been ill before and then had treatment, and we thought that she was in the clear. But then it came back, but I think she kind of kept it from everyone for a little while. So I think she was probably more aware of it than she let on. And it was interesting as well. I remember a few weeks before she passed away, she'd already planned her funeral. She'd called me and my brothers and asked us to be coffin bearers. So she'd had a pretty decent handle on it anyway. I'd also say that on the long drive down to get to my parents in Somerset, whilst I was driving down there, I basically was told, you know, you've got to come down, mum's really in not a good way. And I listened back to the episode of the podcast that I did with Dan from Architects, where we talked about the passing of his brother Tom from cancer, and listening back to that actually helped kind of reaffirm a lot of my thoughts. It clarified how I felt about things. So I'm really grateful for that. it's funny how things sort of make more sense after the fact. Yeah. Anyway, so with all that in mind, let's press on. This is Randy Bly from Lamb of God.
And we're off. Is that going? Good. How long have you got?
What?
How long have you got?
How long have I got?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Everybody's lifespan is undetermined.
This is true.
Yeah, man. I mean, I hope forever. I decided one time I was never going to die.
Well, I was referring to like this afternoon, but that, I mean, we could jump straight in. Let's, on that if you want to.
Go straight into the broader questions.
How long have we got?
How long have we got? Well, I mean, it depends on what you believe about time itself.
Which is a construct.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's the way people understand time, like it's 6 o'clock. You know, yeah. And everything's, there are these arbitrary divisions of individual moments that really have no meaning whatsoever.
No.
Right? 6 o'clock, what does 6 o'clock mean? It means nothing. It's our attempt to measure
and quantify consensus reality.
The unknowable.
Yeah.
And the only thing that truly exists, of course, is this very moment.
Yes.
You know, it is this moment right now, Mr. Dan Carter, you and I here in the basement of Wembley. This is the only thing. Oops, it's gone. And now we're on to the next one.
Yeah.
Which looked much like the one before. But is the previous moment gone? We don't know. Existence is one long stream of this very moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing that evolves is right now.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah.
I think the living in the moment is something that you slowly actually discover and come to terms with as you get a little older. Yeah. You find?
Yeah, of course. I mean, think about someone who's laying on their deathbed. You know, all they have is one moment left. You know, and they don't know when that moment's going to end. You know, they have to be in. I think that's when everything becomes sort of concrete to people, probably.
Yeah.
You know, like, how are you going to spend this moment? Because you may or may not have any more.
It's an interesting one, man. I found that as I've got older, that I want to value my time more.
Yeah.
And yet I still find that I'm living it as if I'm still 18 years old and I have all the time in the world.
Yeah. Definitely feel... Well, we're how old are you?
Nearly 46.
Yeah, I'm 47. I'll be 48 in February.
Yeah.
I think I'm having like kind of like a reverse midlife crisis. Like I'm wanting to become more responsible and stuff. You know, people.
Did you have a midlife crisis to then have like this rebound from, though, do you think?
I mean, I don't know. My whole life has been a crisis. There's, you know, yeah. Like, so I just think mentally and emotionally, whereas most people my age go out and start fucking their secretary and get a sports car or, you know, join a fight club or whatever it is that middle-aged dudes do in order to sort of
feel alive.
Feel alive or whatever. I'm like, whoa, I need to slow down a little bit more and use my time wisely.
Yeah.
Because despite the nature of time being an illusion, it is at the same time finite, our time on the earth. So, yeah. You know, I want to use my time wisely. I think about, you know, what do I want to leave as, I hate to use the word legacy, but what will people remember me for, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got a pretty impressive resume, man.
Right. Though the last thing I want to be remembered for is as the singer of Lamb of God.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't give, dude, who cares?
Yeah, but that's the thing, isn't it? I think a lot of artists use that as their means of immortality to a certain degree. Do you think?
Sure. In music, you know, if you think about, you know, music itself, it being sound waves, you know, like a you hit a note on a guitar, it emanates this sound wave, and that wave travels out and reaches the audience and keeps on going. It's a form of energy, and energy can neither be created nor destroyed.
Yeah.
So, in a sense, music just goes forever and ever and ever. Yeah. So, the music that you make is, in fact, immortal. But so is a fart. That makes noise, too. So... Yeah. I guess it's, and I don't know if smells last forever, you know, if that's an energy, but I think, I don't know, it's trying to figure out, like, what to do with the time that you have on Earth, and what you can do constructive.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's putting good things out into the universe.
Yeah.
That's all we can hope to do.
Yeah. But, yeah. Like, I don't want to be remembered as a heavy metal singer.
Why?
Because it's like probably one of the least important parts of my life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's other people's perceptions isn't it? Other people's perceptions are always going to be, most times people meet you, it will be, you're Randy from Lamb of God.
Yeah, and that's a cartoon character.
Yeah.
You know, I don't run around screaming and hollering and headbanging, you know, like I do on stage in my everyday life.
Yeah.
Why in the fuck would I do that?
You know? But those things are always going to define us, aren't they? The things that we're most known for.
Well, they're going to define us to other people.
Yeah, exactly.
But to me, it does not define me at all.
But do you find that the imposition of other people's opinion is still going to go somewhere in defining you as you are, as yourself, as you react to people?
Well... that's a good question. I think the imposition of other people's perception may force you to, I don't know, act in a certain way. Like, for instance, like when I wake up, as I did this morning, and I was late because I'm jet lagged because we haven't had any fucking sleep, and I missed the shuttle over here. I walked from the hotel, and I just woke up. You know, I had no coffee, brushed my teeth, I grabbed my suitcase, I walk out. I'm like, where in the fuck am I? There's a ton of people out front, and they're like, oh my God! And like... they start running over. I'm just like, I just woke up, you know, like, come on. And this dude's like, take a fucking picture. I'm like, I got to get downstairs because I didn't even know what time our interview was. Like, I thought for all I knew, I was late for the press.
No, it was me that was late.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, I can't be like, for an instance, I have to... like, even though I've just woke up, I have to smile and say, hello, everyone. Because I know that you're looking at me. And then this dude runs up with the camera and he's like shoving it in my face. And I'm just like, fuck off. Yeah. I just woke up.
Yeah.
You know, but I was pretty mild about it. So, like.
That's a tough one.
When a normal person, if he were walking down the street and he just woke up and you weren't in this. You weren't a public person. If someone ran up to them and tried to put their arm around them and shove a camera in their face, how would a normal person react? You know? So in that sense, it can make you behave a certain way because you're used to it, you know? Like, it's kind of like, okay, I get it. You guys are excited to see me. A normal person, like, would just be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And maybe take a swing on a person who's trying to, like, run at them or whatever. I'm not going to do that, probably. Because I know these people don't mean any harm, and they're happy to see me and all that shit. But at the same time, it's like, whoa, I just woke up. I'm a normal human being. Give me a second.
Were you that kid, though, when you were growing
up? Fuck no.
No, because, I mean...
No.
It's funny, isn't it?
Because I went to the punk rock shows where there's a guy... I never fucking sat around and like was like, I'm going to wait for an autograph, blah, 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 you know. I waited for an autograph one time, and it was just to get an autograph for my wife because I thought it would be cool. As soon as I got off a tour with one of my other bands, I heard that HR from Bad Brains was going to be signing records at our local record store, which is near my house. And I was like, oh, cool, I'll go see him. And I just started dating the woman who is now my wife. Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to go get something signed for her. Not for me, signed for her. And I'm going to go see HR, because who knows with him? You know, who knew at that time? And so I bought a copy of the Quickness album because I didn't have anything for him to sign. Mm-hmm. And I got him to sign it to my wife. My girlfriend at the time, you know.
Sealed the deal.
Yeah, and it was just funny, you know, to me.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like, I'm going to wait outside the venue. I'm going to wait outside someone's hotel. I never did that stuff.
But it's different, isn't it? Like, I think that thing now is anyone that's in the public eye, within music especially, like, that seems so much more prevalent now just because of how celebrity in quotes is viewed.
It's ludicrous.
Yeah,
it's like this celebrity is just it's like this illusion, man, especially with social media and all that shit. Like, it's this fleeting grasp, and I think it's led to a lot of like bad stuff.
Yeah.
People doing a lot of bad shit in order to gain attention on fucking Facebook or whatever.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and the police love social media. They love social media because people do stupid things and post it, you know?
Something I found interesting now is when you apply for an ESTA to go over to the States, they ask you as an optional extra if you want to, if what social media you use, and do you want to put your what your social media account
when you apply
is.
For what
an ESTA, like a visa,
a visa.
Yeah, for a visa.
Holy shit.
Which
what's
I find
your social media,
yeah, it's kind of sinister.
Yeah, that's fucking wacky. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
yeah, but the cops love social media.
Yeah, of course,
you know. Yeah. And the whole thing is like gaining some sort of recognition for doing nothing, something transitory that leaves no permanent positive mark on the world. What's the point of it? You know, it's just like constant sort of desperate narcissism, I suppose, you know, which has led to a lot of bad shit, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
But good comes from it, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of good. You can do a lot of good with social media.
You know, the Arab Spring, for example, that was all through Facebook and social media.
I've used social media to raise money for charitable causes as well.
Yeah, there you go. I saw that recently with the Grammy Medal again.
Yeah, again.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, and my buddy and I, who I originally auctioned the Grammy Medal for, he and I are going to figure out something to auction it off for again. Because two people, both named Dan, by the way, who bought the thing have both said, y'all keep it. I just want to to raise some money. So that's positive.
And it's a thing now, too.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing.
Yeah. It's got,
it's like... become like a totem.
Yeah, it's got good energy to it, for sure.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It is funny. I was thinking about this, like, when I was a kid as well. I was never that guy to... There was a couple of times where I'd go and hang out. There was like a record store in London. They would have signings by bands.
Yeah.
But I think that's a thing that you do when you're a kid to a certain degree anyway. Like, I look at things now and I still have moments where I'm like, I want to pinch myself and wish I could tell younger me.
Yeah.
This is how things will pan out. But yeah.
Dude.
I bet. Well, I mean, look at you. Singing for Bad Brains.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, all the bands that I listened to when I was a kid, like, I'm friends with them now.
Yeah.
You know?
It's wild, isn't it?
Yeah. And on the metal side of things, it's like I'm friends with Slayer and Metallica, you know? Mm. And those were really the two bands I listened to, the only two real aggressive metal bands as I listened to when I was in high school, you know? I didn't listen to much metal, but... all the other fucking bands, you know, I know guys in Black Flag, Misfits, Descendants, COC, Bad Brains, I fucking sing for them sometimes. It's crazy, you know? But all of that sort of makes sense to me in a way because of the nature of that scene. It's not about being famous.
No, I get that, but that doesn't mean to say that just because you grew up as a kid and you're obsessed with Eye Against Eye that you're going to end up singing for Bad Brains.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I never would have saw that coming, for sure. You know.
How did that come about then?
I met Daryl through John Joseph from the Cro-Mags.
Yeah.
And I met John Joseph through Jamie Josta. And I interviewed Daryl for a radio show I had on Sirius XM that Jose gave me, you know, Jose Magnet.
Yeah.
He gave me a show while I was awaiting trial after I got out on bail and I was waiting to go back on trial. And he's like, you need to do something to keep your mind off things and do good stuff. So do you want a radio show? And I always love Jose for that. You know?
Yeah.
He's a great fucking guy. And so I was like, but I don't want to interview metal dudes because, like, that's not what I really listened to, you know, growing up. So basically it was like I just started picking these punk rock bands that I listened to in high school and started interviewing them. It was like a punk rock kid's dream.
Yeah.
You know? Or if, you know, any music fan, whatever you're into, it's like, I love this, so I'm going to go talk to my favorite bands about this. And I'd already met some of the people. So, like, you know, I'm a huge Cro-Mags fan. I'm a huge COC fan. I'm a huge Sam Hain fan. And I already knew guys in those bands one way or the other. So I was like, do you want to do my radio show? And I was doing the show with John Joseph, and I was like, I want to interview someone from the Bad Brains. He's like, I'll call Daryl. And then I interviewed Daryl, and we just got along really well and exchanged numbers. And then they had this secret show that came up, which was Daryl's art opening. You know, it was in a gallery in Brooklyn that Questlove runs from the Roots. And it was unannounced that the band was going to be playing. And he was like, we want to do some of the fast stuff. But HR is not really doing that anymore, the super fast stuff. So
why is that? Is that as a physicality, or is it just because he doesn't want to do it?
I don't think, you know, HR had a brain operation a while ago. Have you seen the documentary about him?
No,
you
not
need
yet.
To watch it, Finding HR or Finding Joseph I.
Yeah.
It's awesome. HR is in a much better place than he's been in years. You know, he had some issues that he finally accepted help for, you know, that had been going on for years. His wife got him some help. And then he started getting these really intense headaches, like blindingly painful headaches, to the point, I think they call them cluster headaches.
Yeah.
You know, suicide syndrome, because it makes some people, and I had a buddy who used to get them as well. But he had a brain operation to try and fix that. They cut his fucking head open. So that improved some of the symptoms to the point where he could perform, but it's like, I was never like, I don't think it's not that he didn't want to do it or he was against it. I don't know. Man. It's just kind of like, they were like, do you want to do some of the fast stuff? HR isn't going to do that.
Mm.
And I'm like, yeah. And I thought maybe it might be a physical thing, you know, to a degree. But he sang like Reignition and stuff, like the mid-tempo stuff, and sounded better than he had in years. So I wound up doing stuff off the first record and then wound up doing two more shows with him.
How did that feel? Because I remember when I saw that you were doing it, I texted you and I was just like, holy shit.
Yes. It was super intense because that band means so much to me, not just as a fan of their music, but in their message. You know, everybody, PMA is kind of a catchphrase now, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people know where that came from, how it got popularized. You know, they, of course, took it from Napoleon Hill's books.
Yeah.
But the Bad Brains were the one that brought it into the underground. And that really is something that has stuck with me.
It's wild when you think about how that's come about as well. like a self-help book brought into a world that's just super nihilistic, but they're like this weird outpost of spirituality.
Yeah.
Amongst it all.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah. And, you know, I still talk to Daryl a lot. And I talk to all those guys. I've gotten to know all of them, you know, and they're such good dudes. But Daryl he's so chill. And I was having some difficulties a while back, and I called him. He's like, dude, you just need to sit back and not get caught in your head. You know, don't let the system destroy your head. And it's true, you know. The world is fucking crazy, though, man. You know.
Yeah. The world always has been, but I think you focus on things so much, especially now. You look at things that are going on around the world, especially where you live.
Yeah.
And you just think, this is so absurd.
Yeah.
But it's always been that way. It's just that it has. Like, you can look back through history and look at other moments where it's just crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Even in recent history, you know, it wasn't that long ago that a president was shot.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's something, though, to pay attention to.
Yeah.
You know, is that it wasn't that long ago that, you know, someone crazy, like, killed the president, you know, or I don't know if he was crazy. You know, who knows? I went to the grassy knoll. You would have loved that place. Have you been?
Yeah, I've been.
Dude, what do you think?
Well, I found it interesting that they don't let you into the room in the book depository where he was allegedly camped.
Right. But if you look... I mean, dude, I mean, I grew up...
This is a wormhole that we could go down, but let's just try to avoid it.
Right? And I'm not a marksman.
Yeah.
I'm not a sharpshooter, but I've shot guns.
Yeah, me too.
You know? And looking at the angles and looking at everything, there's no fucking way.
No.
I mean, he probably shot Kennedy from up there, but there's no fucking way that it went down like that. And... I went to the spot where the Zapruder film was filmed, which was really the first video citizen journalism.
Yeah.
You know, from whence all of everything we have now, you know. And I look at the film, and I look at the spot, and I look at the places on the road, and it's just like, there's no fucking way.
No.
It's just common sense.
Why is the guy with the umbrella doing this?
Yeah. It's
like... First couple of shots ring out, and you see some guy open up an umbrella on a blisteringly hot day.
Yeah, it's nuts, dude.
Yeah,
it makes no sense.
Well, it kind of does, I guess, if you look into it, but yeah.
Yeah. But learning from the past, man.
Yeah,
Do you think
people do? En masse, it doesn't seem that way. The way things are getting stirred up right now, it just doesn't seem
Things are getting stirred up. That's a great way of looking at it, you know, internationally things are getting stirred up, you know. I think there's a lot of fear mongering.
Yeah, of course.
you know.
Yeah, what's it this month? What is it next month? You know?
Yeah.
You look back on things like 2 years ago, you know, we're all going to be wiped out by a pandemic that's starting in one part of Africa. And
oh, dude.
And people are dying, and this is the start of the plague that's going to be like the Black Death and rage across the planet. And then it's like, yeah, next thing in the news.
If the last Lamb of God record, there's a song, Engage the Fear Machine.
Yeah.
That is specifically about that.
Yeah.
I wrote that right around the time of the Ebola outbreak.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no doubt about it that Ebola is a fucked up disease, and it's horrific. But I was traveling through a lot of airports at that time, and I remember there being television screens everywhere, and as there are in airports, and every single one of them was talking about Ebola.
Yeah.
To the point where people were walking through, and if someone coughed, I noticed people looking at them.
Like,
and I'm
pulling
like,
the jump, like, swear up and
like,
stuff.
What
yeah.
the fuck, man? Hmm. You know, and I talked to my brother-in-law, who's a molecular biologist, and he really is. He plays with, like, the AIDS virus and the hantavirus and all that stuff. That's his thing, is playing with things that can kill you in a laboratory. So he's a fucking scientist, a college professor, right? So
yeah.
I'm talking to him. I'm like, what do you think about all this Ebola shit? And he goes, well, you know, as far as horrific diseases go, Ebola is a pretty good one because it burns itself out pretty quickly, you know. And I can't remember exactly how he explained it to me, but it's like to look at the news then through all that, you would have thought it was going to be Night of the Living Dead soon.
Yeah.
Like, it was crazy.
Yeah, and before that, it was swine flu. Before
swine flu,
that, it was
mad cow disease, yeah. Fucking, you know, and that's what that song is about. Mm. It's fear. And for the networks that do that stuff, nothing's going to keep you glued to their channel like something that you're scared shitless of, you know?
The thing with that, though, is if you look at it that way, which I think is exactly what it is, it wasn't divisive the way things are now.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Now it's like, it's these people. These are the people that we've got to watch out for. Next week, it'll be those people. They're the people you've got to watch out for. And then you look back at history and you go, hang on a minute. Only like in the middle of Europe, I don't know, 70 years ago, this seems to be the same situation we're in then, only it was those people that were the problem.
Yeah.
You kind of just have to resolve yourself to it and be almost like zen-like in the sense that let it just wash over you and not let that fear stiffen you up so you break.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Be like water.
Yeah.
Bruce Lee.
Well, yeah, it's true.
Jesus.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a crazy time to live in, though, man.
What a trip.
It's crazy.
It's a good time to be an artist, though.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
To either A, document those things and draw attention to them, which is, as you're saying, as you're doing in the band.
Yeah, like, with the band, yeah, it's like the current climate, of course. If and when Lamb of God ever does a new record, it will be informed by that.
Of course,
you know, because you can't help but do it. You know?
But that's what art is. Art should be is the product of the artist making it, and that should be informed by their environment, by what's happening in their life, by everything they're absorbing and reacting to. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, it's the best way of trying to keep sane amongst it all.
Right. I'm just wondering if there's a way to lower the level of toxicity. You know?
Yeah. It's interesting, though, because I think there will be a ton of... Well, there's already a ton of bands writing about it, and there's a lot of music coming out, especially within punk and hardcore, obviously, because that's been the staple. That's how... Look at the Reagan era. We had so many great bands come out during that era.
Exactly. That was what drew me into this whole nonsense.
Yeah, and over here with like Thatcherism, and you had all those bands reacting against it.
Yeah.
And great stuff was made out of that. Yeah. But it just feels like now
there's, as we go back to social media, like now there's a platform for everybody to start picking things apart and shouting. And it just seems like, I don't know, man. It's a weird time. It's a weird time. I don't want it to turn into old guy chat. Do you know what I mean?
But, yeah. But well, there seems to be... It's hard to find an objective sort of viewpoint right now, I think. You know? Like, this is the reality of this situation. Everything is colored by an agenda. At least in America, to my view. You know?
I think everywhere, to be fair.
Yeah. It's... I can't really speak on what's happening in Europe or, you know, Brazil or whatever, you know, because I don't live here. And I think to understand the place, you have to be in it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not my place to really comment that much on stuff elsewhere. But everything...
But you're in a better position than a lot of people, I think, because of... the nature of what you do.
Yeah, because I can travel.
Yeah, you travel, you see the world from a certain perspective.
Yeah, I think I think maybe that's what is going to give... that maybe gives people like me who travel a better chance of looking beyond all the divisiveness, because no matter where I've gone, I've discovered that one... undeniable truth is that people are people. Mm. People are people everywhere, and everybody at the base want the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, what their idea of the proper way to achieve that same thing, which is, you know, everybody wants security, they want friendships, love, family, happiness, you know.
Yeah.
Now, how you achieve that is a much differing matter of opinion. For some people, it's like, we all need to come together and unify and realize that there's no difference. And then on the other hand, you have people who are like, oh, we can't be secure and happy and have our way of life if these people are here.
Yeah.
You know? So there's... the political situation in America is like so fucked up, it's hard to put your finger on it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's hard to make any sort of topical commentary on what's going on in America because it changes so rapidly. Everything is so fucking crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, yeah, it's like a fast running river of turds.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I think on a sort of grassroots level, when you talk to people individually about basic human things, everyone is still the same. It's just a matter of people realizing that, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Would you say you're quite a spiritual person?
I try to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I try to be, man, because I don't think that, you know, we came from nothing and we'll disappear into nothing.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I just don't. That's not what's in my heart.
Yeah, it's not wishful thinking on my part. I just feel like, yeah, I feel there's way more beyond things.
Yes.
And I mean, I think doing things creatively is a window into that to a certain degree. And I think it clarifies those feelings. For me, it does anyway.
Yeah.
You agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the way I look at art. It's a way in all of my artistic endeavors, where it be music, photography, or writing. It helps me understand myself in the moment of creation.
Hmm.
You know, when I look at photographs that I shoot, I'm instinctively drawn to photograph something, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's instinct for me. I'm like, that looks cool. And I take the photo. And sometimes only later when I look at it, will I understand, I'm like, why was this attractive to me?
Yeah.
Oh, there was this element, this element, this element, this element. And all of those elements are being processed by my brain, you know, but too fast for me to dissect in the moment of creation.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that looks cool because I see it, and then I'll look at the picture and look at all the different elements, and I'll be like, oh, that's why that looks cool to me. Hmm. You know, and it helps me, you know, at times understand my emotional state in that moment.
Yeah. I think photography is probably the best example of that over painting, because unless you're working in a super expressive, loose manner with painting, you know, it can take a long time. Whereas photography is perfecting an art and having an eye and finding it and finding the best way to capture a moment and framing things. Like it's like it is taking a little slice of time, right?
Right.
But having it from a certain perspective, because this is the thing, like everybody has great cameras.
Yeah.
Everyone has a great camera in their pocket now.
Yeah. But they use them for fucking shit most of the time.
Yeah, exactly. Not everyone is going to be...
And it's another example of the narcissism.
Yeah.
Because they insert themselves. Look, here's me here. Look, here's me here. And it used to be, you know, the sort of fabled family vacation. Okay, everybody, we'll get someone to stand in front of Big Ben or whatever, and we'll take a picture there.
We're having a good time.
Right. Right? But, like, now it's all like, I'm here. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in my face being superimposed in front of the House of Parliament.
Yeah.
You know? That doesn't do it for me. I'm interested in looking at the situation as it is. Because when I insert myself into that situation, I change it.
Yeah.
You know?
But then even capturing a photograph, that you're still doing that. Because you could stand in a spot in wherever, in the most incredible, mind-blowing landscape, right? Say you're at the edge of the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
Right, there's you, there's four other photographers, all of you have your own specific way of shooting, everybody mm-hmm. is a great photographer, and you're going to get different pictures.
Four different pictures, because we view it a different way.
Yeah, so you are imposing
your decisions. Your sort of viewpoint, there's no such thing as 100% objective photography.
Yeah, you're not inserting yourself physically within the frame.
No. But your aesthetic,
yeah,
you know, and that's what I'm saying. It's like when I look at photographs later, I understand more about myself.
Yeah,
you know, if I analyze them, because I frame things. I don't think a lot when I shoot while I'm shooting.
Yeah, because it's an instinctive thing. That's what art should be.
Yeah, poof. You know,
that's what I'm talking about. Those creative moments are almost without getting, you could say, connections to higher things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't want to go too far into it, because sometimes people would just be like, what are you talking about?
Who cares? Go there. I was reading a book recently that I thought was interesting, speaking of painting and, of course, sculpting. You're familiar with Giacometti?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a book called A Giacometti Portrait.
Yeah.
By an American journalist who is actually a gay dude in the 50s. I think he was in services for a while. You know, of course, he was closeted then. But he was friends with Giacometti. And he sat for a portrait of Giacometti in Paris.
And sculptural or drawing?
A painting.
Okay, painting.
And the guy's name is James Lord, I believe.
Okay.
And he sat there, and it was Giacometti told him, we'll do this in 4 or 5 hours. And it wound up being like 23 days. He kept on, because Giacometti, who was already an acclaimed painter and sculptor,
yeah,
you know, world famous, was like just torn by self-doubt. And he would start painting this guy, and then at the end of the day, this is horrible. And then paint over what he had done. And he'd do this again and again and again and again and again. Yeah. And until finally James Lord was supposed to go back to America. He's like, look, I got to go. And Giacometti's like, this will never be done, you know? And he finally, he tricked him one day because he knew by which paintbrushes Giacometti was going to pick up from observing him for this long when he was just going to start wiping out everything he had done.
Yeah.
And he waited on the final day until he had finished up with some really fine tip paintbrushes, you know, adding little details. And then Giacometti went to pick up the big brush and he's like, it's horrible. And he stood up. He's like, nope, we're done. And so that painting, it's a portrait of James Lord, sold a couple of years ago for millions of dollars. You know?
Yeah.
It's a great painting. But it's a very interesting book about the artistic process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, his is so tortured. You only need to look at his sculptures to see that.
Oh, God, yeah.
Just whittling away until they would just snap.
Yeah.
And wouldn't stand.
And there was actually a movie made about it called The Final Portrait, I think.
Okay.
You should check it out.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Who are some of your favorite photographers? Because I like stuff like, for me, because I'm not a photographer.
Right.
I can appreciate the greats.
Right.
But for me, the ones that really move me are the ones that look like paintings.
Right.
In okay. the sense, so like, I love Witkin, I love Roger Barlin, and right. people like that, you know.
I'm much more, I'm a Leica guy.
Yeah.
So automatically, I am attracted to Henri Cartier-Bresson.
Yeah.
You know, who, like, that's the reason why I shoot Leica, because I looked at his pictures when I first started getting into photography. I was like, I should look at the history of photography, and his name kept on coming up. And I looked at this book of stuff he was doing in Paris, and I was just blown away. I was like, holy shit, you know?
Yeah.
So
What about them in particular?
Well, he had a... Cartier-Bresson is credited with this saying, this sort of philosophy called the decisive moment, right? Which is a picture. When you take a picture, if you're out looking, if you're going out and doing photography, you're waiting for the decisive moment, particularly in regards to like human interaction, you know, with things. He was one of the founders of Magnum Photos, of course, the collective. Along with Robert Capa, who's a famous fucking war photographer. But he's waiting for the perfect moment to take a picture when everything lines up, you know? Hmm. As far as like light exposure, people moving or whatever, he would sit at a spot forever and wait, you know? And for me, that's sort of guided the way I try to view photography. I find myself shooting less and less photos when I go out to shoot and waiting for that moment. And when I shoot with the Leicas, the M's, everything is manual. There's no autofocus. There's no rapid fire. There's none of that shit. Hmm. It's like point, focus, compose, shoot. Hmm. You know? So it's a much slower process, but I'm getting much better pictures.
Yeah.
Than I did when I first started with like, you know, a Canon DSLR that could shoot a million frames a minute and a big zoom lens. I use prime lenses too, which forces you to engage with your subject. Hmm. There's no telephoto.
Yeah.
You have to move into almost the picture. So
when you say better pictures, define that. How do you mean?
How do I mean better pictures? They're visually more striking. The subject matter is better. Yeah. You know, they're composed better, exposed better.
Hmm.
Everything is on point.
Yeah.
You know?
I saw that you'd been away on a couple of those, like Leica events.
Yeah. Yeah. I just had well, it's still up, but I don't know when this is going to air, but it's up until like November 7th, the Leica Gallery in Boston. Hmm. Had an opening, which 2 days ago, Tom Hanks stopped by and saw my show, I was told.
Nice.
I wish I'd been there.
Yeah.
You know? And then I spoke at Photoville, which is a big photo sort of exhibition conference in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
For them. I have a really good relationship with them. They sent me a loaner over here to Europe to shoot with their new model.
How does that come about?
The guy walked in here earlier. When I started researching these cameras, like Leicas, they're expensive, by the way, very expensive.
Yeah.
I started researching these cameras because I was looking at Henri Cartier-Bresson. Hmm. And I was like, oh, who do I know who has one of these things? And I started asking through the sort of music network of photographers I know, music photographers. They were like, oh, Andrew Stewart shoots Leica, who's here tonight. He'll be shooting Slayer. He's been doing stuff with them. And I happen to know him loosely. So I was shooting in Hollywood. I was shooting Duff and Slash from Guns N' Roses, just with my buddy Sky Uchida. And Andrew showed up and brought his Leica. He's like, do you want to play with this? I was like, yes. And so he let me shoot that day with it, and I was just hooked. Mm. It requires some work. You know, it's not like you can put it on dummy mode or whatever. It requires some work, and it's just totally changed the way I view everything. So, and then, of course, Nikki
when
Sixx.
When you say, yes, Nikki we'll get Sixx to that in a shoots. Second, but when you say it's changed how you view everything, do you actually mean, like, you look at things differently
Absolutely.
Now, even when you're not carrying a camera?
Oh, always. Yeah, constantly. Yeah. I am constantly. Photography has done that even before I shot Leica, though. I'm constantly framing everything.
Yeah.
Looking at light, looking at the leading lines. Like, I'm looking at you right now and thinking of your position with that line, that line, that line.
Yeah.
And you're right there. And if I were to shoot, you would be over to this side of the photo. Hmm. You know? I'm driving, I'm walking, everywhere I look, I'm noticing light, first and foremost.
Do you know William Mortensen? Do you know that guy?
Mm-mm.
He was an American photographer who wrote a book called The Command to Look.
Right.
And he also is quite famed, again, like I said, about photographers that make pieces that look like almost like paintings, that his work is very much like that. And you know that publishing house, Feral House.
Of course.
So, okay, yeah. They put out, there's a couple of books. There's one called American Grotesque, which mm-hmm. is like a, almost like a monograph of his work.
Right.
But they republished The Command to Look as well. Right. And that's really interesting from an artistic perspective. You'd get a lot from it, I think, because...
It's prose?
He talks about the line of things and how it's almost in an archetypal manner. Like, if we have this curve here, this will create this sense of feeling within things, and it represents all these archetypes. Right. If we have very sharp, monochromatic diagonals that are almost like teeth or daggers, then that creates things within that way.
That's the way the human eye is. That's why you don't, for the most part, if I'm going to take a picture, the subject, generally, you don't put it directly in the middle.
Yeah.
Because it's boring, you know?
You want to lead into it, yeah.
Yeah, there's no leading or whatever. But yeah, so, yeah. And then, of course, Nikki Sixx shoots Leica.
Yeah.
And then they flew me and him over to Wetzlar, Germany last year. Was it last year? Earlier. Well, either last year or earlier this year for the release of their new model. So we hung out and got to play with these new cameras.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah, we're just like little kids.
Hmm.
Like, holy shit. You know, what are we doing here with all these like Magnum photographers? Other photographers I like, have you heard of Fan Ho?
No.
He's a Chinese photographer who shot a lot in Hong Kong in the 40s and 50s. And
okay.
A lot of high contrast black and white stuff.
Yeah.
And
kind of Ouija-esque.
But I would say more like the Asian Cartier-Bresson. Like,
okay.
But some of his stuff looks like paintings. And then Costa Manos, I got to hang out with him.
Yeah.
He's a Greek-American photographer from South Carolina who lives now up in Provincetown, Massachusetts. I went up to hang out with him, and he took me and another photographer around, showed us where to shoot. I love his work. Ara Güler, who just passed away, he was known as the Eye of Istanbul. He is
you know you're doing all right when you've got like something that's almost verging on like a wrestling name referred to within your within your field.
He shot Istanbul a lot in the 50s and 60s before it became a lot more modernized.
Yeah.
And he just passed away, but he was, you know, a lot of, I don't think a lot of Americans know a lot about him,
yeah,
you know, or maybe even in Europe that much, but over there, and his work is freaking fabulous.
I'll check it out. All right, yeah. we should wind it up because we've been 45 minutes.
Right.
And we didn't even get into half the stuff, but we can do that for another time.
Yeah. Is that okay with you?
That's fine with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You good?
Yeah, sure.
Cool. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to keep up to date with Randy and his photography, please check out his only social media page, which is on Instagram, which is at drandallbly, which is drandallblythe. I will put that in the notes anyway, but yeah, I just thought I'd spell that out as well. Because it's spelling, yay. So all the stuff to do with the band is online as well, which is at Lamb of God. I'd also state that I've been thinking about the podcast a fair amount recently. And I realize that it's nowhere near as regular as it should be, but I still feel like this is my opportunity to sit down and have conversations with people that are either my friends already or people that I want to be friends with. And I feel like I see in them through their work that we have a lot of common interests, and I kind of set these up so that I can discuss that with them and see if I'm right and think that the things that I see within their work is what they intend it to be. And generally when that happens, we end up becoming good mates. So yeah, I could be banging these out a lot more, and I probably should, I guess, if I was actually thinking properly, that this should be a bit more of a thing, if you know what I mean. I should be doing them every week or every other week. And I've also thought about doing sort of solo episodes where I just sit and ramble, much like I'm doing now. But that kind of defeats the object of it being someone who isn't me, I guess, if it was just me. Yeah, that probably wouldn't work. But yeah, I've done a few other podcasts for other people as a guest. Recently I've did Off the Beaten Track and also Hardcore Listing, and I'm gonna do an episode of The Downbeat with Craig as well soon, which will be a laugh because I think his podcast is amazing. If you don't listen to that, you should check it out. You don't have to be a drummer to enjoy it, because I am not a drummer, but I do enjoy their conversations that he has because they're always ace. And I think I'm going to end up being the first guest on it who has no clue about drums. It's just I like doing them in person rather than via Skype. It also takes ages to paint the covers. So, yeah, I should probably do something with those as well. Because they take so long. And I think that if I was to do something to sort of help support the podcast, I should probably make shirts or prints or something. I will also ask you that send any thoughts and suggestions to the socials, which are at Swim Podcast. If there's anyone that you want to hear on the podcast, reach out and also tag them as well, because that would always make things a lot easier. So as always, thank you for listening. Spread the word. Please recommend the podcast to people you think will be into it. Leave a nice review on iTunes. Stream it on Spotify on loop as well. You don't even need to have the sound up. Just turn it down, because then I can see some of that mythically elusive Spotify dollar. Yeah. Cheers. Peace.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.